Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. Very good. The weather is lovely today. We've hit that nice sweet spot of hot enough, but not so hot you want to die.
Pretty sure I wanted to die earlier today.
It's not that bad.
Well, I need to just basically go out to move my car. Not great.
That was one thing I do not miss from the summer life growing up, is having to go out to the hot as fuck car in the middle of the summer.
Yep.
Especially old ones that didn't have great AC, which most high schoolers, myself included, drove. Not great.
I'm nearing 30, and I still drive one of those, so.
the solution to that problem I found is just live in the city and no one drives.
True.
All right, so promote, extend, trade. And on this date back in 1997, so I think we were all born?
Yes. Yeah. I was three.
Yes.
All right. So, well, on this date back in 1997, Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield had a rematch for the boxing heavyweight championship at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, and things very famously went awry, and instead of a good, clean, exciting fight, Mike Tyson got disqualified for biting Evander Holyfield's ears off. So anyone who paid for that fight definitely did not get their money's worth. So with that in mind, what other sporting events did not live up to the hype? What are we going to promote, extend, or trade here?
Oh, boy.
So first we have UFC 203, where former professional wrestler CM Punk got choked out in like 2 minutes after a lot of hype because of his past history as a wrestler and becoming a UFC fighter. Next, we have the 2007 World Series. It was the Rockies versus the Red Sox. And the Rockies, you know, steamrolled through everybody to get there. They went on that crazy 21-game winning streak. And then they just lost to the Red Sox 1-2-3.
Matt Holliday still hasn't touched home base, by the way.
No, he hasn't. And then finally, we have Super Bowl 48, where the Denver Broncos got blown out 43-8 by the Seattle Seahawks from literally the first play of the game.
The Omaha.
Yeah.
Are we rating these like which one is the worst as the one we're extending, or the least disappointing is the one we're extending?
However you want to go, doesn't really matter. What would you say is the most disappointing to least?
I think the Super Bowl is, just because like it's the Super Bowl. Like,
yeah.
That was also supposed to be a very good game.
Yeah, like CM Punk thing, like most UFC fans were like, CM Punk is not going to actually do well, you know?
Like, did not.
And with the World Series, like, it's multiple games, so it's like, you could kind of tell where it's going after like two, sometimes, like if it's going to be a blowout like that. And the Rockies were fine. They weren't like as good as Boston was, I don't think. But that Super Bowl was supposed to be like a really good and close game. And like first play, you were like, oh, Seattle's going to kill them. And that's what happened.
Yeah, that was.
I find myself oddly not disappointed by any of these because A, I don't care about the fight.
Yeah.
B, the Red Sox winning, they were the better team, and also Matt Holliday karma, so fine. And C, as a Patriot fan, or more accurately, a Tom Brady fan, I'm a very casual fan. Yeah, boo me all you want. First Super Bowl I watched, I liked the colors more. I stuck with it when I was like 4 or whatever. It's fine. But I obviously am not the biggest Peyton Manning fan, so I found that Super Bowl quite enjoyable. I don't know what you guys are talking about. Yes. This should settle this Manning versus Brady debate once and for all. Not to mention, that was the year that the Patriots almost won in overtime in Denver in the AFC Championship game with, like, literally everyone on the roster except Brady and Gronk hurt.
Yeah.
And Gronk had that crazy, like, over-the-shoulder catch on 4th and 20 to keep things going. So, yeah, screw the Broncos.
Was that the year Tebow did, like, crazy stuff in the playoffs? Or is that post-Tebow?
No, that's much earlier.
Yeah, that's okay. Earlier.
I don't know.
That was before they got Peyton.
Mm-hmm.
That was even before Elway worked for them, I think. I could be wrong on that, though.
I don't know.
I think so, but I would have to look that up, and I don't feel like it right now.
No, I don't care enough.
I don't feel like connecting those dots because I'm going to have to do multiple Wikipedia searches.
Oh, no.
Weirdly, I'm now, like, rooting for the Broncos to be less incompetent because I love Jerry Jeudy, and I'd like him to have a real quarterback, but, you know.
That's a great
Juan Uribe football quote?
Yeah.
Fucking football man.
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to agree with the Super Bowl being the most disappointing because just one game.
And it's like 2 weeks of hype. Like,
oh, that's true, too.
Because they have the off week in between, which to get everyone like kind of in the Super Bowl mood. So, like, I don't know. It always sucks when that game sucks. Unless you're a Seahawks. Unless you're a fan of the team that's winning by a blowout.
And that was the year it was also over here, too, I think, right?
Was that one? Because I know the Broncos played in 2 in that stretch, and I always mix up which one they won and which one was in New York. Like, I don't remember if they won here or not. But
no, they
doesn't matter.
They played in 2013, won that one. Then the Patriots won in 2014 against the Seahawks, and then it was Seahawks. Oh, wait, am I getting that wrong?
I thought because Peyton Manning retired a Super Bowl champion because that was like the weird season with Brock Osweiler, like playing a lot of games. And then
oh, like, to Wikipedia we go.
And then they benched him in the playoffs because he was not actually good.
Well, in any case, all these things pretty much sucked for a lot of people.
I mean, the people who went and saw Mike Tyson bite an ear off, you know, they got more of their money's worth than any of these other things. Like, that's a moment in history for better or worse.
Yeah, that is.
Probably at the time, you're like, I really spent all this money for that. But, like, now, you're like, yeah, I was there.
I saw Mike Tyson bite a dude's ear off.
I heard the crunch.
Oh, why would there be a crunch? There's no bones in it.
I heard the crunch.
All right, well, moving on now to the CPBL, KBO, and NPB. There are still no games in Taiwan. The league submitted a proposal to the Taiwanese government last week about restarting the season with, you know, only essential personnel and special safety procedures put in place and stuff like that, but it was denied. So no more CPBL baseball for the foreseeable future. The LG Twins now, they are 500 on the week. They went 3-3. But they fell out of first place, and they are a half game behind the Samsung Lions. Pitching really has not been great this past week, but the hitting was definitely everything was clicking. They scored more than 10 runs twice in the week, and for the most part, that was against other contending teams. They played the Landers and the Lions. So it shows that the offense can definitely hang with some of the better teams in the KBO. Their leadoff man, Chang Ki-hong, he got 12 hits over the course of 6 games. Right fielder Yu Song-che, he logged 10. Their first baseman, Bog Young-moon, he hit 4 homers. Hun Soo Kim, the outfielder, he hit 3 homers. You know, it's a lot of runs were scored. Pitching obviously was much less impressive, but Casey Kelly, their ace, he has years of experience in the KBO being good, so, you know, not someone you should be worried about. And the other guys in the rotation, they have high upside, so, you know, nothing to be worried about. They have the ability to shut down other high-powered offenses. They just didn't really do it this week. And last but not least are the Occult Swallows. They went 4-2 this week. And coupled with Hanshin Tiger losing streak, they made up a lot of ground between them and first place. And they're only now 3.5 games behind, which is crazy when you think about it. Because a couple of weeks ago, the Tigers were, like, running away with everything. And they had, like, a 10-game lead over second place. So, obviously, there's still months of baseball to go. And I don't think the Occult Swallows are good enough to overtake Hanshin. But you never know.
It's a fun run.
Yeah. I mean, if they do, they will definitely need Masamune Murakami. And on Wednesday, it looked like, excuse me, Munetaka. What did I say? Masamune. Wrong name. But it looked like Murakami hurt himself. He fouled the ball off his knees, and he was taken out of the game on Wednesday. But luckily, he is fine. He didn't actually miss a day. He's 3-14 since getting hurt and taking that foul ball. So maybe he could have used a day off or two, and that iron mentality isn't necessarily a good thing. But even before that, earlier in the week, he was 1-6, so he's just kind of having a down week, I guess. But either way, obviously, as a MVP-type player, the Swallows' success will be very, very much depending on, you know, Murakami's numbers. Now, before we move on to take a look at the Mets teams here, I want to just take a couple of minutes to discuss an infographic that I saw online from Advocates for Minor Leaguers, which is an organization that advocates and fights for better conditions for minor league players, much like Jeremy Wolf's organization, More Than Baseball. Since the Mets and the Phillies are playing this weekend, the infographic, it compared how the Mets and the Phillies treat their minor league players. And Philadelphia provides a housing stipend for players. It fully pays for hotel stays on the road. They paid players during extended spring training. And the Mets, on the other hand, do not do any of that. And as we broke down on our podcast, probably at this point, like a year ago or so, it costs somewhere between $5 to $10 million, somewhere in that range, to fully house players for just 5 levels now, to provide them meals that are just more than grilled cheese and peanut butter and jelly, stuff like that, and to pay them fair wages, at least, you know, minimum wage. And Steve Cohen, obviously, he's the richest owner in baseball by a wide margin. The Mets are one of the most highly valued organizations in baseball. I think they're 6th out of 30. I don't know when that valuation was made. Probably pretty recent because the Mets are sold and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, Major League Baseball is at a all-time high in terms of profitability from all those TV deals and all that kind of stuff. And yet, here we are, stuck with the same old bullshit. And Cohen wants to change the culture, you know, with the sexual harassment and the workplace fraternization, all that stuff. Great. How about we start treating our players just as nicely as you treat your executives and treat them with some dignity? You know, he wants to be the cool guy on Twitter, and he wants to be the cool guy at the fans and everything like that, and not one of the good old boys, but yet he's still one of the gold boys here, not breaking that, you know, that unofficial agreement that everyone has to artificially depress the labor market in the minor leagues and all that stuff. So it'd be nice if, you know, this guy can walk the walk and talk the talk.
I don't disagree with anything you've said. I'll give him, I don't know, like 5% of the benefit of the doubt because it's his first year as owner. I think there's maybe an argument it takes a little time to implement this stuff, but everything else is spot on, I think. If he doesn't do it by next year, then there's no excuse.
Yeah, this offseason.
Right. Like, and especially because he bought the team so late, and then they, the whole GM situation, which is its own separate problem, of course. Like, not that that excuses any of this stuff on the part of baseball as a whole, but.
Yeah, I disagree. I mean,
he could do it right now. Like, literally.
Some of that he could do right. Right, exactly. All you have to say is send down a memo to your, whoever it is that's in charge of these things. We're going to be paying all of our money to the players for extended spring training. From
that
April.
From I'm April talking more about now. The housing. Like, the housing stuff would be difficult right. to set up at the drop of a hat, right? Like, that's.
You can give stipends for it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, you could say we're doing stipends now, and then with the idea of setting up full housing for the players into next season, because maybe we can find enough of it now. I don't know.
That's a fair point, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I will say the hotel thing to me is the most insane part. What business doesn't pay for their employees when they're traveling for work?
Yeah. The Mets, apparently, but...
Yeah. And of any business, I think the Mets would make the most sense. But it is just, it's... I don't even have the words. It's embarrassing. I don't even know if embarrassing is not the right word. What is the right word here?
I mean, it's disappointing.
It's like
I'm not necessarily embarrassed because I'm not the one making this decision. Like,
right,
like the one in charge of the decision, but it's more like, come on, guys, just do this. Like, just be good people and do this. Like, what does it cost for Steve Cohen in the grand scheme of things to pay the minor leaguers and give them housing and stuff like that? Like, it's nothing for him.
One less painting, I guess.
It's infuriating both from a moral standpoint and also just from the as a fan of the team that wants them to do well, this would be a huge competitive advantage. Just please just do it.
Infuriating, that's the word I was looking for.
There you go.
There's no way this doesn't pay for itself, like, almost immediately.
And we've discussed this many times, Dom Smith.
Ooh, yeah.
Right there.
I mean, this is, I guess, I suppose, tangential. But, like, I think it's a pretty well-known fact that the Rays pay their scouts better than anyone else. And that's probably a huge, huge reason why they consistently pump out more talent than everyone
else. Yeah, it was in that Athletic article.
Right. I mean, it's almost like there's a direct corollary in almost anything with how much money you put into it and the quality of the results you get out.
And of course, the Rays have their own problems. Like, just
no, don't get me wrong, please. I'm not like, defending
no,
the
no,
Rays'
no, yeah, I'm not
overall
that.
Model. The point is, though, that like they invested a little bit more on their scout. They pay, let's say, they have like 50 scouts. They pay each of them, I don't know, an extra $100,000 a year, which is probably more than what the surcharge is. That's $5 million. That's a middle reliever. You think the Rays aren't generating more value than a middle reliever out of paying their scouts that much extra every year? The math is nonsensical.
Their entire team is like on the minimum because
exactly
like, because of how they choose to spend their money on the payroll situation. So like they're doing it out of necessity, but also I don't know how a team like the Yankees or the Dodgers or even the Mets now with how much money they have. Don't see that.
You think they'd say, huh, why don't we just do that?
And also spend the money. And then we're just, you know what I mean? Like, then you're just way better than everyone else.
I mean, before, not that the baseballs of economics have, the baseball of economics? The economics. Oops. The economics of baseball ever been perfect. But I would argue they used to be a little bit healthier. Right? And this is kind of what the Red Sox did at post-Moneyball. They're like, oh, yeah, we could do that with money. And now the rich teams just say, oh, we're going to do that. With money, right? Anakin well, face. With money, right? No.
It's literally a market inefficiency to, like, spend money. It's like that one year when the Brewers, like, got kind of good and made the playoffs when they, like, paid Lorenzo Cain market value. And everyone was like, wow, they're spending so much. And it's like, well, you're just spending what a veteran would cost like 5 years ago. They're just doing something that no one else is doing. And it worked for them. And now they're and they're going to make the playoffs anyway, not with any of the veterans making their money, but still, you know what I mean? Like, that was worth it, because how much is it actually affecting the bottom line now that Lorenzo Cain is bad? It doesn't really matter, because they're still going to make the playoffs. So, like, just, you could do both. You could be smart, and all, you could do your money ball thing, and also you could win the World Series by spending money.
Money fixes all problems. We'll spend some goddamn money, baseball.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to Open Signal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Got money goals? NerdWallet's got your back with the smartest credit cards, mortgages, investing accounts, and more. Maybe you're looking to book that thrice-postponed honeymoon. NerdWallet can help you compare and find the smartest travel rewards card now so you can earn points towards that much-deserved trip. Or if you're thinking it's time for a bigger house now that your family is about to grow by exactly one bedroom, NerdWallet's got calculators and tools to help you find the smartest mortgage. And since your family is growing, it's probably a good idea to think about your child's future college plans, right? Well, NerdWallet's got your back with the smartest investing accounts for college funds and more. With side-by-side comparison tools, calculators, and more, NerdWallet can help you find answers to all of your money goals, big or small. From credit cards, mortgages, investing accounts, and more, NerdWallet can help you compare and find the smartest financial products for you. For all of your money questions, turn to the nerds at NerdWallet. NMLS 1617539.
All right, so let us now take a look at the Mets minor league teams and how they've done this past week.
Do we have to talk about?
Yes, unfortunately.
we could just talk about Brooklyn for like 30 minutes.
We could talk about three players on Brooklyn for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's better than the alternative of zero players on the other team. Oh, no, one player on Binghamton and then no one else.
Yeah.
Listen. Let's just talk about Syracuse and get it out of the way. And for anyone who has not realized, Syracuse has been very bad of late. They've been very, very bad. They've been very, very, very bad. Coming into the week, they lost 12 games in a row. Mm. Tuesday's game was postponed because of the whole COVID testing thing. So technically they didn't lose, so that's great. But then they lost on Wednesday to make it 13 games in a row. Then they lost both halves of the doubleheader.
They did.
On Thursday to make 15 games in a row. Finally, miraculously, astonishingly, they won the game on Friday. They broke the streak. And it was a come-from-behind win, too, so that kind of makes it a little bit better. But they won, and that's all that matters. And as we record now, they have a 12-34 record. They hold 20 games behind the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Railroaders. I went through the standings, not only of the AAA East, but in the former PCL, the AAA West, AA, High A, Low A. Syracuse is the worst team in all of minor league baseball. There's only one team that's close to being as bad as them, the Visalia Rawhide, which is an Arizona Diamondback Low A affiliate. They are 13-34, so they have a half-game lead over Syracuse. But man, are they bad.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And we cover the minors every day between the four of us. One of us is doing the Daily Farm Report on one, you know, any given day. And then obviously we do more than just kind of copy and paste the box scores without actually like reading and understanding what's going on. Like we'll look at it, we'll write a narrative about what's going on, and we have a good idea of who these players are and everything. And I have to say, on any given day when I'm doing the Syracuse report, I have, like, no clue how these people are, how they got there. Robert Stock pitched the other day. Who's Robert Stock?
He pitched against the Mets, like, a week ago.
I don't know.
They claimed him off waivers.
Yeah, waiver claim.
The Cubs.
Vance Worley pitched. Where the hell did he come from?
Independent ball.
Oh, well, yes, clearly.
And he was a former Met legend. Vegas.
I know who Vance Worley is, but it's like, when the hell did he?
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, yeah. That's so funny that he's literally a retread from Vegas being so bad that they needed to do this.
I mean, it's a combination of two things, I think, right? Like, obviously, the Major League team has been absolutely fucked by injuries, so any quad A guy is now on the Major League roster.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the three prospects, who I think, quote-unquote prospects for some of these, I suppose, that we would mostly care about on this roster, Sapucki, Colome, and Khalil Lee. Sapucki and Colome have both been bad. And Khalil Lee is striking out a ton, though he's also walking a ton, but like not good enough to fix all the other problems. Like there's just no prospect capital on this team, and there's no quad A depth on this team.
Yeah,
I was looking at the roster. There's 36 guys in Syracuse right now. When you take into account rehab assignments and guys on the DL, whatever. Mm. Of those 36, 8 of them, I would say, are guys that are homegrown, that have been in the system for a couple of years now, long enough for us to like know them. Harrell, Franklin Killamay, Stephen Nogasek, Marcel Renteria, Thomas Zapucki, Trey Cobb, David Thompson, Matt Winokur. And I'm not saying that these guys are all good, but these are guys that have been around for a couple of years. So basically 2/3 of the team right now are just like free agent guys that were signed because they need someone to play.
They ran 3 injuries deep in New York and had to like field a lineup the next day four guys got called up.
It's a good thing they have all this depth because the Mets have been okay as of late, you know, better than okay a little bit, but yeah, it just highlights how bad the top of the system is.
I'm looking at the roster. I forgot that Aroldis Vizcaíno is on this team.
Yeah.
I would like, we've got no,
I'm surprised he hasn't gotten a chance yet.
Yeah, I figured he'd be one of the first guys.
I guess it's
probably hurt, yeah.
I think he's still hurt, because he hurt his elbow late in spring, but we haven't seen any updates. Yeah.
It's just, I think it's one of those things that it's hard. Like, you don't really think about how the major league injuries would affect the minor league system until you see what Syracuse went through. And, mm-hmm. like, it's really not fair to Syracuse to expect them to really do anything when you have to call up like their entire starting lineup to the majors so the Mets can play Atlanta. And then like the domino effect of that is it then causes your AAA team to field a team that is not good enough to play in AAA, even with how whatever the minor leagues have been as a whole this year. Like it's the domino effect of all the injuries in Queens, and we don't see it every day because obviously not everyone's watching Syracuse play all the time. But when you're doing the minor league reports and you're like, Jesus, they've signed 4 more dudes out of indie ball and they're all bad because like they have to. It's almost like every day there's a new random dude on the roster because someone else got called up, and it's hard.
Definitely feel bad for those Syracuse season ticket holders. If they exist. I'm sure they exist.
There's at least 2.
At least 2. And they both listen to the podcast, so.
Both are. Which one's of our moms?
All right, let's move on now to the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, who are a little bit more tolerable. They won some this week. They lost some. They lost some this week. They won some this week. They are 2-3, and they are just starting Sunday's game very soon, or it actually just started. So depending on how that goes, they're either going to be 500 for the week or one game under 500 for the week. But they have a 14-31 record, which is not great. And that is 16.5 games behind the Somerset Patriots in the AA Northeast. There are some players, some standouts. We were talking about him a couple of weeks ago, Hayden Sanger. He's still maintaining that BABIP. He only played in 2 games this week. So it dropped slightly from 500 to 474. But it'll be fun to see how long he could keep that going, because he is basically their primary catcher. He gets, you know, 4 games a week or so. And he has been with Binghamton for about a month. So he does have a month of maintaining basically a 500 BABIP. So,
I mean, good for him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hey. Jake Mangum, he was super hot when the Mets first promoted him to Binghamton. He cooled off very much, but he had a good week this week. He had 2 3-hit games, and he had 2 homers over the span of 4 days. So he's hitting like 241, 261, 402 with a 293 BABIP. That seems a little bit lower than a guy, you know, a guy like Mangum probably could be running. You know, he's very slappy,
yeah,
speed oriented. So, you know, I expect him to do a little bit better.
And the BABIP's going to rise, and then it'll get right to where we think it should be.
Carlos Cortez, he added 7 more hits this week, including 2 doubles and a homer. And he is currently hitting 297, 364, 564 with 8 homers now. That is impressive.
With Cortez, it's the same thing with McGill, that I don't necessarily think that they're good, but they've played well. Like, McGill pitched well enough to get a shot, even though I don't know if he's going to be a good major league player. And I think if Cortez keeps playing like this, he's going to get a shot. I don't know if he's good enough to be in the majors, but he's playing himself into gets called up for like 3 weeks in a year because guys got hurt. You know what I mean?
But at this point, why the hell is he? Why is he still in Double A at this point?
Yeah, just call him up at Triple A at this point.
Let him do it. Well, last but definitely not least is Mark Vientos, and he went 7 for 16 this week. And Binghamton, yeah, they're playing right now, so he might add to that. But he went 7 for 16 with a double and 4 home runs. So in the month of June, he is hitting 300, 382, 767 with 4 doubles, 8 homers, 6 walks, and 16 strikeouts. So if you add that to his really, really cold May, he's up to a perfectly fine for the year. 261, 325, 565 with 9 doubles, 11 homers, 12 walks, and 47 strikeouts. I went back and watched some games from earlier in the year on MILB TV, and then I was looking at, you know, some more recent games from June. I did not see anything that really stuck out as being drastically different. You know, his stance, stride, swing path, it all looked pretty similar to my admittedly very untrained eye. I'm far from a hitting coach, and as you guys know, the quality of those MILB TV feeds vary. Yeah. But I mean, everything looked the same to me. Now here's the thing: I don't want to be a stick in the mud, but he credit's due. He really went off these last few weeks. Is it a coincidence that in these same couple of weeks that he went off, the Rumble Ponies were facing the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, the Bowie Bay Sox, the Portland Sea Dogs, and the Reading Fighting Phils, all of whom are the worst pitching teams in the AA Northeast? Only Binghamton themselves and the Hartford Yard Goats have worse pitching.
I mean, still got to hit them, though.
Yeah, you do. You do. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't want to credit where credit is due.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
All that, though, you know, even if he does come crashing back down to earth to whatever degree once they start facing some other teams, there is still a lot of good to take away from here.
Mm-hmm.
Vientos is, I didn't realize, I mean, it seems like it should be obvious, but I didn't really realize it. Vientos is the second youngest player in the East, in AA, Northeast. Only Riley Green is younger. He has a 135 WRC plus right now, taking into account that May. He skipped over high A completely and made the jump from basically low A to double A with a year off in between. So that probably makes it a lot more difficult. Yeah, he's still showing some of those issues against off speed pitches, but he's not striking out right now these last couple of weeks at the same rate that he was earlier in the year. So, I don't know. I've always been a very big Vientos fan. You guys know that. Now that he's doing good, I feel like it's just kind of like my personality. Like, he's doing good. So I need to, like, look everything super critically so I could tear it all down, you know? But
I mean, good for him, honestly, because he was real bad to start this season. Like, he couldn't hit anything. So It's really impressive to see how much he's turned it around.
It's I mean, just in June, look, I've been probably the biggest Vientos detractor. He's only striking out 24% of the time. His BABIP's only 280, and he's got a weighted of 200.
Mm-hmm.
That's there's like he's not that, but there's some real improvement there. Like I don't think that's just what's Voros's law, right? Like anything can happen in 60 plate appearances or whatever, or 60 games, whatever the fuck it is. So yeah, could that be anything? Maybe. And minor league pitching is garbo this year, especially the Eastern League. So. But still, that looks semi-real.
Yeah. And, like, I feel like we've been talking about Vientos forever, but he's only 21. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility for him to take the next step. It's not like he's 25 and we're, like, it's some post-hype guy. He's still very young. Like, most 21-year-olds are not in the majors at this point. So, like, he still has a few years to really continue to develop. And hopefully, like... For me, hopefully, because I like the DH. But hopefully we get the DH soon, and that opens up another spot for the Mets to have a bat. And you won't necessarily make Brett Beatty play left field like he did yesterday. Like
we'll get to that.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's nice to see him do that. And I also think that he's going to be the first guy traded if they make trades. So that'll be funny if he finally figures it out and that happens. But we'll see.
Nothing else boosting that trade value.
Mm-hmm.
Although, to be honest, there's not really much that I'd be happy with as a return in a trade.
Yeah, it's a weird deadline.
All right, now let's move on to the Brooklyn Cyclones. Cyclones that played Jersey Shore at home this week. They went 3-2 against them with some exciting come-from-behind late-inning victories. And then, depending on how they do in this game that they're playing right now, either they'll have a 500 week or a 4-2 week. And if they have that 4-2 week, they'll gain some ground on the first place Hudson Valley Renegades. Right now, they are 16-28, 13 games back. The Renegades are kind of starting to run away with things because they have an 8-game winning streak going, and they're 14-3 in the last couple of weeks. I wish we had a good team like that, damn. basically, the odds of Cyclones going on a run like that are probably not too likely because they're very top heavy. There's basically the big three. There's a couple of interesting complementary players who are guys that are not going to like embarrass themselves. And then you just have some really bad pitching.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's literally nobody on the pitching side.
No.
Yeah. That's the problem for them.
Mm-hmm. So looking at the big three, let's start with Ronnie Mauricio now. And this week, he had something of a down week. No, not something really. He definitely had a down week. He went 2-21. Both of those hits were singles. And he did not walk once. So that's not good. But let's be a positive podcast here for change. He only struck out twice all week. So that's good.
Steve, why are you shutting me down like this?
Listen, strikeouts were definitely a big problem for him, but he's starting to get that under control. The last 2 weeks, he's only struck out 3 times. And the first 2 weeks of the month, he struck out 17 times. So that is a pretty stark difference there.
Still the guy I trade first.
I think the Mets agree with you.
Look, I'm working real hard as the Mets right now to find someone who thinks he's the 7 and get him out the door.
Work those phones. Work those phones, man.
I think it happens in the off season just to maximize the amount of time you get with the next person, unless it's someone under control for a few years. But yeah. I think that's the guy that they deal to make the team better just because he's a shortstop and you gave a lot of money to Francisco. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's the perfect time to get him, to trade him while people still like him and, he hasn't moved off shortstop yet. Like, you're still playing him there, and you can pitch him as one to other teams.
If not for the Mariners and their... I don't know what his contract situation is exactly. Or not that. How they feel about trading guys they signed for Japan, I'd be looking pretty hard at, like, Mitch Haniger and Yusei Kikuchi from the Mariners. That's probably my... favorite group of guys to trade him for if they would do that, but I don't know that they would.
Didn't they have some like young kid come up and he was like 0 for 70 or something like that?
Yeah,
some outfielder. Yeah, maybe we can. Yeah. Maybe we can get that guy.
Yeah, well, Bilo, take him off your hands. Like, we'll take him.
Seems fair. Right, Brett Beatty now, he went 4 for 15 with a walk and 6 strikeouts, and all 4 of his hits were extra base hits, which is nice. He had 3 doubles and then a homer. And, of course, his home run was an opposite field homer, and it was just his second home run at home.
I mean, that's a hell of a ballpark to hit one home run out.
It's weird. Like, even though he's a lefty, and that stadium is obviously deaf to left-handed hitters, but he goes to the opposite field so naturally and so easily and with so much power all the time. I'm surprised he doesn't have more home runs at home. Yeah.
He's just missed a few.
He has. Like any other dimensions, he's probably has a few more to his name. So I'm not necessarily worried about the power. I think it'll play up in other places.
Definitely not worried. It's like a weird, weird facto. Yeah, it's an oddity. Mm-hmm. Another oddity is seeing him in left field, as we did Saturday night.
Sure.
He had only a couple of opportunities to prove himself, which I guess is good, bad, I don't know. But his first put out, it came in the fourth inning, no issues. In the sixth inning, there was a ball hit to him, bounced off the wall. He played it off the carom fine. In the ninth inning, there was a ball hit down the line. He had to hustle to, get it in what was eventually a double. But, he didn't do anything egregiously bad or anything. So 3 opportunities. Nothing looked horrible. But just why? Why must the Mets do things like this?
Do you think they're looking towards giving him a promotion and juggling him and Vientos?
Yes, that's exactly why.
Because I think they're doing the same thing with Vientos today.
They've been moving they've been splitting, I don't want to say 50-50, but Vientos has been playing a lot of first base. The Binghamton doesn't even have an actual first baseman on the roster right now, I don't think. So if you're going to put them both on the same team, you could put Beatty at third and put Vientos at first, and you don't need to like get fancy.
Yeah, but I think you still want to give Viento some first base time or third base time, excuse me. And I think I have less of a problem with this than you guys. Like, I don't have a problem with them.
I don't really have a problem with it either.
I don't have
because I think Batty might end up like a pretty good corner outfielder.
Mm-hmm. I originally when I first saw it, I was just like, what the hell? Like, why are we gonna do this? Why are we gonna have and Lucas do it a situation? Why are you going to do this to themselves?
But I would say he'd probably be a better outfielder than that.
Yeah.
I also think it's better to... It's not a Lucas Duda situation because they're doing it in the minors.
Exactly.
Right.
They're not throwing him into the deep end, at Citi Field.
Beatty is like a big kid and he's built and everything like that. But he's played football and he's played basketball in high school, which is not that long ago. And he was good at both of them. And both of those sports require running and adjustments based on where the ball's going and like awareness of where you're going and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think he's actually going to be like that bad of an outfielder. Not going to be a Gold Glove defender or nothing like that, but he's not going to be bad. But it just seems so unnecessary.
I also think it's one of those things where like versatility is so sought after now that like you're not putting yourself into a box if you come across a Matt Chapman trade and you have a third baseman of the future, then like you're not like, oh, Beatty has nowhere to play now. But if you teach him how to play left field now, like I don't know if I would necessarily do that and do it the way the Mets are doing it, but I think I kind of understand the reasoning of just moving guys around because that's what you do in modern baseball.
Man, modern baseball sucks. Let's go back to old-time baseball. No one used gloves, and balls were caked with mud and tobacco juice and other substances.
Guys were paid in beer and stuff.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I bet the owners would like that part, actually, to go back to that. Mm-hmm. All right, well, last but not least now is Francisco Alvarez, and he missed a couple of days early in the week because a foul ball knocked him in the nuts, and he definitely deserved a couple of days off. But, like, I guess...
Jesus Christ.
It released some extra testosterone in him or something because he's gone off. He went 2-for-3 with a walk in both games that he played in since coming back. He hit a home run in both of those games. And not only were those home runs homers, but they were moonshot homers.
That one from last night hasn't landed yet.
I'm pretty sure he knocked it over the roller coaster.
Yeah. The first one went over the video scoreboard in left center, over that replica cyclone on the scoreboard. So straight down the line, it's 315. Dead center is 412. So that screen is probably like 375, we'll estimate.
Yeah.
Take into account, the wind is blowing in from right.
I can actually get an answer to this right now.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Google Earth.
Oh, damn. We're really breaking out the heavy equipment.
Your number one Google Earth podcast. I don't know if that's true, though. So
probably not. There's a lot of weird podcasts out there. But in order to clear that scoreboard, wherever it exactly is, and we'll get to you in a moment about that, but it would need enough height and velocity to fight the wind, and the wind was blowing in at 14 miles an hour. So it need to fight the wind.
Oh, it's an SAT question.
Oh, damn. Word problems.
You do math, right?
Yeah, but I have to admit I zoned out for the last 30 seconds there. What am I doing?
Just calculating the wind of Brooklyn to see how hard he hit a ball. Francisco Alvarez.
Well, we know from the next day, with his second home run, which basically went about the same spot, that it was only 94 exit velocity off the bat on a slider. He absolutely turned on it, but don't know about that first one. But still, I mean, to clear that, it's 375, whatever. It's about 20 to 20 feet high. So that's a very well hit ball.
So that scoreboard is between 340 and 360 feet, depending on where it's, because it's kind of like a slant.
Yeah.
So depending on where exactly. So he cleared it by quite a bit.
It was
cleared on a line or on like a really high
really
shot?
Really high shot.
All right, then it might have only gone 380. Only 380.
I think he definitely got 400. There's like a little fence that separates it from the amusement park.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure he got it into the amusement park area. Mm-hmm.
Here's a random Coney Island factoid. So the Thunderbolt, which is the roller coaster that's right next to the stadium, it's kind of new. It's the newer version. There was an old roller coaster called the Thunderbolt in that lot.
Approximately 550 feet from home plate.
Oh, damn. And underneath that roller coaster, the owner of the property and of the coaster had a house underneath the roller coaster.
Imagine living under a roller coaster.
Not a great idea. Not good to sleep.
I would lose my mind.
The only thing, every time I watch one of these highlights from the cyclone, this is a total aside now. Every time I watch one of these cyclones highlights where you see the roller coaster in the background, the only thing I can think of is that old roller coaster tycoon meme where you could make your park launch people into the park next to you so that they died in their park, lowering their popularity and sending more people into your park.
That's awesome.
Not that I'm saying that's what the cyclists are doing.
Well, I've never been on that Thunderbolt. I never will. I have been on the Cyclone once to impress a girl. I will never do that again either. So.
Oh, I hate roller coasters, so get them out of here.
Really? I love roller coasters.
I can't do it. I don't like heights either, so
when I'm
up there and I'm just like, oh, this is how it ends, is I just go flying off this thing, roller coaster tycoon style to bring it back, but.
Well, to bring it all the way back now, Alvarez is hitting 288, 389, 613 in 25 games for Brooklyn.
That is the youngest player.
As the youngest player.
By like a significant margin too, right?
No, by at least a full year. He's the only 19-year-old in the league.
He has a 168 RC plus. Look, is Alvarez good?
Yes. Like, he's a catcher, so it always could happen where the Mejias of the world are look like can't miss catcher prospects and the next big thing, and then they're like average major leaguers, so you never know. But damn if he's not good. Like right now.
I think he can really fucking hit.
Yeah, like, it's going to be funny if he's going to be, if he ends up one of those catchers who hits so well that they move him. Because they're like, we can't have him catching, like, you know, like how that happens sometimes. But I don't know, man. It's hard. I try to, like, balance my logical, oh, catchers sometimes don't end up what you think they're going to be, even if you think, even if you're very staunch with it because of how hard it is to develop as a catcher. And he's slugging 600 at 19. So, like, you know, like, it's hard to balance those two, but I'm excited about him.
Your Francisco Mejia comp scares me a little bit because Mejia at 19 in advanced day had a 140, and suddenly I'm like, oh, shit.
That's what I'm saying. Like sometimes the dudes just, the catchers especially, they just lose it a little bit. And it's like, I don't want to put that on him because it's not fair because sometimes they're Buster Posey and they become the best catcher in baseball for a while. And JT Realmuto and Grandal and plenty of catchers work because there's 32 of them, double that. But also, there's a lot of instances of the catcher prospects being really, really good and then kind of not developing because of everything else they have to do.
It's so possible, but I really think he's legit. Like,
I think he could hit is the thing. Like, I just think he'll be able to hit, even if he ends up like a DH or a first baseman or some shit, like, put him at third like Pablo Sandoval, I don't care. But, like, like, he's, I think he's going to be able to hit, and that's the important thing.
Well, we will continue following his career with great interest.
Real quick before
right, calm
we leave
down
Francisco.
There, Senate.
How high realistically do you think he ends up in like a top 100 prospects in baseball this year?
He's gonna be, I
think would, there's a chance he gets up to top 10.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think so.
If he,
I think he's
really,
honestly,
really good.
He might be top 15 on the upcoming midseason 50, honestly. I think there's a non-zero chance that happens. He's gonna be top 25.
Yeah, I
think
there's
a real chance he gets into the top 15 in midseason top 50 list.
I honestly can't see anything lower than like 30.
Yeah, 30 is his base floor, I think, too.
Yeah.
Like, just accounting for he's young and hasn't played a lot. But
like, there's a realistic shot he ends up playing in Double A this year as a 19-year-old.
Very late in the year, yeah. But I think you give him as much time as possible.
Entirely possible.
I hope not, just because to be greedy and get to
see him more.
Yeah, no, I don't want people to get promoted.
Yeah. Just stay in Brooklyn forever, please.
Just a while longer. I need to get like two more looks.
It's just funny to me how like bad this minor league season has been for the Mets, and also Beatty and Alvarez look like they've taken the next step. So, like, sometimes I look at those box scores and I'm like, oh yeah, he went 4-for-5. And they lost.
It's kind of funny, right? Like, we came into the season just saying, yeah, this system's really top heavy. And 4 months in, we're like, yeah, this system's even more top heavy now.
It's just gotten like, there's like three top 100 prospects if you consider Mauricio, which I think he'll make the list, even if we don't really love him as much here. But like, and then nothing else. And Allen would be too if he was healthy, I think.
Listening in on, for those of you who don't know, BP's doing these really great Monday night talks on Twitch, of all places.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty poggers, where they talk about their list process. And reading between the lines, I think all three of Mauricio, Beatty, and Alvarez are probably going to sneak into the top 30.
And they should. They deserve it. And
I don't agree on Mauricio, but
a healthy Allen would be there too, probably. And also, the Mets system is like last in entirety of baseball in record. So, like,
well, they have one good team that we can discuss now, the St. Lucie Mets. And they went 2-3, and they were winning today's game. Last time I checked, I think that they won. So it looks like it's going to be a 500 week for them. And that means that they're going to be 26-22 on the year. And that is still first place in the low A Southeast East, a couple of games ahead of the pack. JT Ginn, he pitched against Dunedin, the Blue Jays, and his star is pretty much almost identical to his quote-unquote clunker a couple weeks ago against the Hammerheads. 3 runs from 5 innings with 4 hits allowed, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. But the underlying numbers, you know, everything looked fine. He even hit 95 with the fastball, which is the hardest that he's thrown all year, so that's nice. But, you know, nothing.
Care.
Yeah, nothing looked bad, so that's all that really matters.
outside of literally getting like lit up by 10, like as long as he gets out of these games relatively healthy and solid, I don't really mind this year.
Yep.
Another young guy that coming back from Tommy John, just finish the year with your elbow intact.
Mm-hmm. Another guy that looked very solid was this week was Alex Ramirez. He was 2-4 with a homer in today's game, and he was 5-17 before that. So he's 7-21 on the week with a double, a triple, and a homer, which brings him to, if my math is correct, 260, 325, 500 on the year. So that is definitely very encouraging as a 18-year-old with like 20 games under his belt.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to see.
There's such stuff that puts you on the map.
Mm-hmm. Jalen Palmer, he had 3 multi-hit games this week. And then again, factoring today's game, he is 7-16 on the week with a double, a triple, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts. Strikeouts are still a little bit of an issue for him, but he did control them this week, so that's good.
Yeah, he's got to get that down if he's going to make strides. He can't strike out like that, but I like him. Like, he's just one of those dudes that I like. Like, I want to see him do well.
Mm-hmm. Another guy who's quietly having himself a very good season in St. Lucie is Jose Peraza. Through 38 games, he's hitting .266, .435, .430, with 4 homers, 32 walks, and 39 strikeouts. And he went 7-4-16 this week with 2 doubles, a homer, 6 walks, and 1 strikeout. Now, he's not old. He just turned 21 a couple of days ago. I'm not sure if we want to call 21 age-appropriate or not in St. Lucie anymore since the rezoning of the minor leagues, whatever you want to call it, has kind of made things a little weird because he is a guy that has a couple of years of experience under his belt in rookie ball and then short A. And he is competing against guys who are really just first getting their feet wet. So I don't know.
He's going to get promoted, I think.
Yeah, but he's having a pretty solid season. Yeah. The book on him coming into the season is basically he was a power overhit guy, which pretty much was what the numbers did show. But all of a sudden this year he's hitting solidly, but he's walking at an insane pace. 18.9% walk rate right now.
Yes, inject the plate discipline gods into my veins. Yeah. Will Toffee, I learned no lessons from you whatsoever.
The BABIP, it's .349, a little bit, you could see some regression, but that's not like it's crazy high or anything like that. Like .349.
Yeah, people run that sometimes if they hit the ball really hard.
I mean, like you said, a Peraza promotion is probably imminent. He is a third baseman, and he's probably just limited to corner. But, maybe that's why Beatty is getting some time.
That could be it, too. Yeah, in the reverse sense, where they want to call him up and Beatty needs a place to play.
Because I don't think that Peraza can play anywhere else, whereas Beatty, I think, can. Mm-hmm. Peraza is like, what is he? I want to say off the top of my head, he's like 5'10", 230, something.
He
like
might
that.
Be able to play first, but, I mean, like, are you going to stick him that first? He's short, 5'10".
Plus, we have Joe Girardi at first base.
Exactly, and he's going to be a minor league legend.
Actually, he's a little bit taller than it. He's 6'1", 220. I thought he was a little shorter than that, but still.
Definitely not a full 6'1".
No, yeah. He's also funny because he's like, I'm sure you guys have those too, but those guys who always show up doing stuff on your prospect reports, he always does something when I do the prospect reports. It's always like him driving in a run. I'm like, oh. Fake Jose Peraza, you're back.
let's see, what other? I feel like St. Lucie, it's just a hodgepodge of like random guys who are just having crazy years. Warren Saunders, right now, he's hitting on the week. He's hitting a cool 500, 467, 674 this week, thanks to a sack fly. So, I love when there's weirdness like that. We were talking about BABIP a little bit earlier with Hayden Sanger. Joe Suozzi, he's also running a crazy high BABIP. It's .460 on the year. And in the 19 games that he's playing in total, St. Lucie is a .315, .405, .370 line, thanks to that BABIP. So I think that makes him the best nepotism pick that the Mets have ever had.
It's pretty low bar.
It is. I mean, I was trying to think about other guys that were blatant nepotism picks. All I could really remember was Daniel Alfonso, who went to college and just has not pursued baseball since. And Mike Piccolo, who is the son of Kansas City Royals GM,
whatever.
No. Or maybe not the GM. Assistant GM, I don't know. His last name is Piccolo, but he didn't sign with the Mets, and he's actually eligible to be.
Wait, they drafted Piccolo's son? They drafted Gohan?
Yes.
Although how the hell did that not work out? This is too niche a joke for the podcast. Never mind.
No, I would hope that we all know Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so.
He had to fight in the Cell Saga, Lucas. Like, he couldn't pursue baseball. What are we doing?
That's true. He's in the hyperbolic time chamber right now.
He's going to come out at, like, age 23.
He's going to come out in 15 years and be only 22 and be a god.
Yeah, he's going to be Mike Trout times two because he's been in the hyperbolic time trainer hitting time chamber hitting a fastball.
Or alternatively, he could be the great Saiyan man, in which case it's just all fucked. We don't want that. All right, well, I think we've pretty much lost everybody at this point.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, let's go to Oh Yeah, That Guy. And on this week, back in 2013, this starter had a pretty good outing for the St. Lucie Mets. He threw 5-plus innings of scoreless baseball against the Bradenton Marauders. He allowed 5 hits. He walked 2, and he struck out 8. And this man was Rainey Lara.
That's a good name.
Rainey was signed as a international free agent in 2009. He was really good in the DSL 2010 and then in the GCL in 2011. We know at those levels, though, you know, the numbers are more or less meaningless. But he really broke out onto the scene in 2012 when he pitched with the Brooklyn Cyclones. Him is a bunch of good names. Him, Luis Sessa, Gabriel Ynoa, Hansel Robles, Luis Mateo, and to a much lesser degree, Julian Hilario. They combined to form one of the best pitching staffs in minor league baseball that year, ignoring level of difficulty and all that kind of stuff. The 5 of them combined to allow 110 earned runs in 413 innings, which comes out to a collective 2.40 ERA for all 6 of them, which is very good. And that basically, I would say, is where we figured out that Coney Island makes pitchers look really, really good who probably aren't really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Rainey Lara was promoted to Savannah in 2013. He was pretty decent there. But things started catching up to him when he was promoted to St. Lucie mid-year. He wasn't necessarily bad there, but basically he went from pitching from Coney Island to pitching at historic Grayson Stadium to now pitching at St. Lucie, which is, you know, it slightly skews towards pitching, but not in the way that Coney Island does and not in the way that Grayson Stadium does. And then 2014, he was promoted to Binghamton, and the reels really came off there. And he spent the next couple of years basically bouncing up and down, back and forth between Binghamton and Las Vegas before eventually getting his minor league free agency in 2016. And he went unsigned, and he has not played in affiliated baseball since, but he did spend a couple of years playing in Venezuela and in Mexico in the winter leagues there. And then he played for the Bridgeport Bluefish and then the New Britain Bees in the Atlantic League. But he hasn't played professionally since 2019. And I feel like with Corona and everything that's happened, you know, last year, I'm guessing that in the future there's going to be a lot of guys when we start looking at it that had their careers end professionally in 2020. But, yeah. You know, Rainey had stuff that was fine for the lower levels of the minor leagues and was really stretched at the upper levels. And that's basically why he stalled out at Double A like so many other guys. He was a 2-pitch pitcher. He had like a fastball and a slider and neither one of them were particularly good. Which is funny because the numbers were so good early in the earlier part of his career. Fastball sat like 88 to 91 and the slider was in the high 70s, and he had a couple of different ways he could throw it, you know, tighter and loopier, but he basically telegraphed it all the time. And his mechanics were terrible. He didn't use his body well. He threw a lot of arm. Miraculously, though, he didn't have any arm problems. it did cause him to basically flame out pretty quickly in games and lose effectiveness fast. Even though he was a starter for his entire career, and he usually threw, you know, 20, 25 starts every year, he averaged like 5 or 6 innings, so he didn't really go deep. And I think just looking back at his career, it really highlights how much has changed in terms of prospect coverage and just kind of like minor league developmental thought in general, because he was at one point a top prospect in the system. According to Amazing Avenue, he was, I think, in the 30s. Now, if we were doing our prospect, you know, we don't go 30 deep anymore, but, you know, if you are considering someone, you know, let's say 25, that last spot, and you had a guy like Renny Lara, a guy that had not great mechanics, had a fastball that sat 88 to 91, and a slider that he got strikeouts with, but he telegraphed all the time. Would you rank that guy?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, well, in this system, maybe, because it's so garbo, but on principle, right. The principle of your question, no.
Yeah, I think that just shows how, in the last couple of years, how, you know, specialized, I guess, pitchers have become, or I don't know what the right word is, but, I mean, a guy like that, you're not going to give real any consideration to.
Also, a guy like that would be stuck in the, would be put in the bullpen, even in the minors, pretty quick.
Right? He was definitely miscast as a starter for basically his entire career.
Yeah, I think they would have given him the chance to start, and once it didn't work at Binghamton, they'd be like, all right, you're a reliever now. Go have fun in the pen.
But, I mean, this was, you know, 10 years ago, give or take. It's just crazy to think about. Like, you don't really realize it as you're living it, but so much has just changed, like, in the span of 10 years, which is crazy in terms of baseball and everything. And now, finally, the Will Connery of the Week. And this is something that escaped my notice, so I'm going to need to rely on you guys a little bit more. But Major League Baseball has some bad all-star uniforms, I hear.
Yeah, sure, I have a, as always, I have a rant. honestly, this is one of, like, the most fun things unique to baseball, right? Like, the all-star game in the other major sports is stupid because they're fundamentally team sports, and you get a bunch of guys together, and it doesn't work. Like, no one's trying to play defense in the NBA level. No one's trying to make hits in football. I imagine it's a similar setup in hockey, right? So it's not even a real game. But the Major League
hockey is like, they split it up into, like, smaller games. It's a whole thing. Like,
yeah.
Major
League Baseball has the best all-star game, I think. And it was always a really nice nuance that, just because of the way baseball was, you could also see your favorite players out there for your team in their uniform. Like, next, that was always cool.
Next to other players in other uniforms.
Right! Like, it was, like, unique and interesting and fun. And MLB was like, blatant cash grab, make some all-star uniforms. And let's be clear, that's 100% the reason they did this. And, like, if they were good, I still might be a little annoyed. But I'd be like, okay, that's a cool uniform. They're awful.
So they've been creeping towards this with, like, making different jerseys for, like, the home run derby and stuff, and I'm fine with that. Like, if you want to keep the actual game the only thing in the regular jerseys and everything else is you want to have a fun home run derby jersey based on the where you're at, like what stadium or in the city and stuff like that.
They've always done that.
Yeah, and I think that's cool. Like, I think it's cool to have two different ones because – sure, it's still a cash grab because then, like, oh, I bought the Jacob DeGrom, like, All-Star game one, like, the All-Star one instead. But also, you saw Jacob DeGrom strike out the side in the Mets blue and orange. You know what I mean? Like, that was cool. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to see it in this weird soccer-looking uniform because that's really what it looks like to me.
It's way too close to those awful Players Weekend uniforms that they had.
The first Player Weekend uniforms were so good, too.
Yeah.
That first group with, like, the Mets was the blue and orange, like, pullover, and it was, like, really team color-oriented, and then they went with, like, all white and all black, and it was like, what the hell is that? But, like, I don't know. They're just, like, they look like soccer jerseys, and
it's bad.
The hat's also really bad.
And it's, like, it was one of the coolest little new, like, what was wrong with the patch? You had, like, a stadium-specific patch.
Hat with a patch on it, perfect. Sell
right,
that.
And then you get to wear your actual uniform, and it's like, oh, this is cool. And I don't know. I'm and like I like the home run jerseys. They've been home run derby jerseys. They've been using are also like good looking, not this crap.
I like the Miami one when DeGrom mm-hmm. and Conforto went. I think mm-hmm. I really liked that All Star jersey. Mm-hmm. It was like dark blue and red. It was really nice.
Basically, what you're saying is Major League Baseball can't do anything right.
Yes.
Mm. Seen that one coming from a mile away.
It amazes me. It feels like you need three marketing graduates who are baseball fans and a week of work to do a better job marketing the sport than they've done in the last decade.
And it's like, it's not like the jerseys recently have been overly bad. Like, a lot of people like the City Connect jerseys that have come out. Like, they started off with the weakest one so far, with the Red Sox one, but the Miami one is fun, and the White Sox one, I like that one a lot. It's different. And, like, I kind of expected an All-Star jersey to be better based on what they've been putting out recently. This is towards Nike, not MLB, because they're the ones who design it. And they were just, like, it's a very busy pot, like corner of a jersey that has all the stuff on it. It's very weird. And the hat is really bad, but the hats are never really good. Like when they change up the hats, they have a hard time finding a good hat.
Well, I mean, outside of DeGrom and nope. I guess Stroman and Walker, we don't need to worry about any Mets going to the All-Star game.
And so. DeGrom would start it, but he's going to be, with the way his pitching schedule is lined up, he's not going to be able to pitch. Mm-hmm. He would have pitched like 2 or 3 days before.
Well, Pete said he's going to be in the Home Run Derby.
That's true. Mm, so.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Home Run Derby in Colorado.
That's going to be fun.
All right, so now that we've shit on MLB, I'll give them credit for making generally good Home Run Derby choices. Shohei, Pete, Trey Mancini is an excellent inclusion.
Yeah, the Trey Mancini one is awesome.
Well done. Doesn't make up for your other bullshit, but you did good.
Yeah.
And if I wasn't rooting for Pete and or Shohei so hard, I'd definitely be rooting for Mancini.
No, yeah, for sure. It's so cool letting him do that.
God, I can't wait to see Shohei hit a ball 600 feet in Colorado. It's going to be so good.
He might do that in a regular season game, the way he's hitting balls.
Yeah, but he doesn't get to go to Colorado.
That's true. I'm just saying in general, somewhere else. He hit the back wall of the Trop like 2 days ago.
It's, I don't know, dude. The dude's not human.
Break out Google Earth again. How far is Los Angeles from Colorado?
Let's see.
All right, well, while Ken is looking that up, if you have any questions, comments, or whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Seipel. Lucas is at elvlahus343. Ken is at kenlevin91. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Thanks to HubSpot for supporting this episode. Don't cobble together your customer experience. Craft it with HubSpot. Its CRM platform is powerful and a joy to use. Adapt quickly with a flexible system that you can customize to fit your business needs. Achieve unparalleled alignment across marketing, sales, and service with natively built tools and a thriving ecosystem of integrations. And achieve adoption like you've never seen with a delightful UI. Experience a CRM platform that makes it easy to create remarkable customer experiences at HubSpot.com.